This is Kurt Benrud for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Did You Know?
This is Par Calls, and this program's designed for a print and visually impaired audience.
And this is Bob Martin, and do I have a story for you today? The news is so hot that it hasn't even happened yet. Spaghetti farmers in Switzerland are going to announce the total eradication of the deadly spaghetti weevil. For the first time in years, spaghetti farmers are expecting a full and bountiful crop of all forms of pasta.
Bob, that was an April Fool's Day joke. We told that months ago.
No, that story was about spaghetti farmers in Italy. They claimed that the spaghetti grew on bushes. Everybody knows that spaghetti doesn't grow on bushes. Of course, that story wasn't true. Spaghetti grows on trees. Besides, this story happened in Switzerland.
And are they growing new seedlings by putting pieces in cans of tomato paste?
You can do that?
We think Bob is just putting us on.
But we are never quite sure.
No, we're not. But the date on the calendar does indicate that we are indeed at April Fool's Day yet again.
You remember how observance of the date came into being? They changed the calendar from Julian to Gregorian in the 16th century, and some didn't remember. Well, we're not going to look at any more histories of the day. We're going to tell some of the pranks that have been played on this day, just because the calendar said that today is April 1st, April Fool's Day.
That means that this week's edition of Did You Know comes with a warning label attached. All stories told today are April Fool's stories. Believing any of them could be hazardous to your sanity.
Well, what about the stories that I'm not going to tell?
What about them?
Well, if I tell a story, they'll know it's not true. But if I don't tell the story, then how will they know if it's true or not?
If you don't tell a story, they won't hear it. And if they don't hear it, they don't have to worry whether it's true or not.
Sure, so go ahead and not tell them a story.
Okay, ready? Oh, you won't believe your ears when you don't hear the story that I'm about to not tell you. Well, what do you think? Did they believe it?
I don't know. What about the story not about?
The eradication of the deadly spaghetti weevil from Australia. Ranchers in the outback have given up the flocks of sheep and have started planting spaghetti trees. They've even changed the song.
What song is that?
The one they used to call Waltzing Matilda. Now it starts out, "Once a jolly swagman camped beside the billabog under the shade of the spaghetti tree." Like that.
I think you're right, Bob. People will never believe their ears. Thank you for not telling that story.
Here are some stories that we can tell you. In 1996, this story came from the Virgin Cola Company. "We are proud to announce a new breakthrough which will assure the freshest product. When the cola reaches its sell-by date, it will react with the aluminum in the can, and the can will turn bright blue."
Hey, that's not such a bad idea. If you see a bright blue can, then... Wait a minute. Pepsi-Cola comes in a bright blue can.
Yes, it does. And it was right after Pepsi unveiled its new bright blue design that Virgin Cola came out with its prank.
On October 31st, 1999, the Savings Bank of Rockville, Connecticut placed an ad stating that beginning the next day, there would be a $5 fee for the use of a live teller. The ad said that the fee was necessary to provide professional, superior, and caring customer service. The customers were not amused. One lady even closed her account. The bank immediately posted a second ad stating that it was just a joke for April 1st. Afterwards, the bank manager commented that, ironically, the second ad committed them to never charging a fee. I wonder if that last comment was part of the joke.
In 1986, a stunned French populace awoke to the news that the Eiffel Tower was going to be moved. Bolt by bolt, the tower was to be disassembled and carefully marked, and then reassembled as the main feature in the new Euro Disney theme park. The old site would be used for a new 35,000-seat stadium for the 1992 Olympics.
Hey, wait a minute. The 1992 Olympics were held in Barcelona.
Well, so? People could leave the stadium, go to Euro Disney, climb to the top of the tower, and then watch the events in Barcelona.
Another story about construction. In 1990, the News of the World newspaper reported the Great Tunnel Blunder. A tunnel was being built under the English Channel to connect France with Great Britain. Each country was responsible for half, and construction started simultaneous from each shore and would meet in the middle of the channel. As they neared completion, they discovered a small error. The French engineers had insisted upon using the metric system for their calculations. The two sides were going to miss each other by 14 feet. Cost of correction, $14 billion.
I remember reading about that. You know, it may actually have happened.
Bob, Just think about it. The story itself gave you clues that it was made up.
Well, somebody could have woke up and read the story before they looked at the date. Where in the story am I told that it's not true?
Okay, the French used the metric system for measurements. What system did the English use?
They use a metric system, too.
So the distance they were off is given in feet?
And the number 14 is used twice.
It would have taken a lot of money to move a tunnel 14 feet.
And remember, the Europeans write their dates differently than we do. For us, April 1st is 4/1. For them, it is 1/4.
Wow, that's pretty obvious. Who would be dumb enough to believe that?
Well, try this. In 2007, the basic hoax was pulled again. Only this time, work was stopped when the British workers struck oil.
Striking oil? Well, now that I believe.
Good for you, Bob. You realize that oil strike will save you 14 cents a gallon and will give you better mileage by 14 miles per gallon.
Oh, now really, Kurt? They're British. That discovery will save you 14 shillings per liter, and your auto will improve by 14 kilometers per liter.
Excusez-moi, mon ami.
Quite all right.
In 2008, the paper industry has just announced a new breakthrough in ecology. There has been so much interest paid to the recycling of paper that chemists have discovered a way to take recycled paper and genetically alter it so that they can grow a paper tree. Further pulp processing is no longer necessary, as you will be able to go outside and simply pick a piece of paper off the tree in the same way you used to pick a leaf. There are different varieties of trees for different colors.
I wonder if they'll be able to graft onto a gum tree and, you know, make those sticky tabs.
Well, speaking of trees, in 2006, the Daily Mirror announced that an oak tree had been discovered that bore the exact likeness of Queen Elizabeth, Prince Philip, and Prince Charles. It was an English oak, of course. The discovery was made by Lionel Day, who was walking his dog in the New Forest in Hampshire when the dog chased a squirrel up the tree. Now, the exact location is not being revealed for fear that it might attract druids.
From 1973, the BBC had an important announcement about the dreaded Dutch elm disease, which was devastating the country. The good news is that the exposure to the disease will immunize you against the common cold. The bad news is that it will turn your redhead to yellow. It has to do with the blood count of redheads and the condition of the soil around infected trees. Redheads were advised to stay out of the woods for the foreseeable future.
One more story about trees. Did you know that America's fitness craze had some unexpected effects on certain trees? Lots of diets are recommending cutting back on carbs. So, people are eating fewer pancakes, waffles, and French toast. Waffle houses across the country are going out of business.
What has that got to do with trees?
Well, if people aren't eating pancakes and waffle houses are going out of business, who's buying the maple syrup?
That's the problem, people not buying maple syrup?
You're getting close. What do you think happens to a maple tree if you don't tap it for syrup? Huh? Well, it will build up pressure until finally it explodes. You're walking through a forest in Vermont, minding your own business, when all of a sudden, nature's sumptuous and sugary sweeteners turned into dastardly demons of destruction. In 2005, the Vermont Health Board reported 87 fatalities, 140 maimings, and several dozen decapitations.
Hey, here's a story from back in 1901. The German Gardener's News described some recent botanical studies. Under certain conditions, plants could produce so much phosphorus that they could be used as a light source. The flowers of the clematis would glow like stars, and most important, a variety of sunflower was cultivated that would emit enough light that you could read a newspaper in the middle of the night.
In 2002, a British supermarket chain announced the sale of a variety of carrot. It was engineered with tapered holes down its sides and was called the whistling carrot. When it was cooked to the proper degree, the carrot would emit a whistling sound to tell you it was done.
Getting ponied up for the Scotch lad or lassie has just become a wee bit easier, thanks to Grant Bell of West Barnes, which is in East Lothian, Scotland. In 2009, he announced the breeding of a tartan sheep. There's a shearing available for whatever plaid you may want. And don't be worrying about being overcharged. You won't be getting fleeced. There's a BAH code on every one of them.
Cameras have been getting smaller and smaller. You can take pictures with your cell phone. Get ready for the next step. Also in 2009, Kodak announced its iCamera 4.1. Just put on your glasses and you're ready for picture taking. The camera features a what you see is what you get viewfinder. It's great for parties and class reunions. Special equipment includes a facial recall assistant and an image stabilizer for picture taking after a couple of glasses of wine. For special outings, you may want to include the X-ray vision attachment and super zoom lens.
We interrupt this story for another important announcement. It was just announced, after an arduous trek across the bridge to nowhere, that a cure has been found for the deadly spaghetti weevil which has been devastating spaghetti crops in Alaska. It's believed that the reintroduction of the spaghetti tree in Alaska will reverse global warming.
It sure seems like 2009 was a great year for April Fool's Day stories. YouTube announced that they would start flipping their picture. They reasoned that since it was necessary to flip your mattress every so often to preserve its life, so it was beneficial for your monitor. You can easily accommodate to the new YouTube practice by inverting your monitor. If you have a fairly new monitor, then you can either shake your head back and forth or move to Australia.
The Taipei Times announced a disturbance at the Taipei Zoo. It was discovered two panda bears were actually Wenzhou brown bears, who had been dyed to appear if they were pandas. The discovery of the subterfuge occurred when certain activities began taking place. Panda bears are known for their extremely low libido, and these bears weren't practicing Tai Chi. Within the crowds, children were screaming and parents were irate. Official complaints were filed against the mainland for perpetrating the hoax.
Switzerland is one country that adheres to a policy of 100% employment. So, when the spaghetti weevil was eliminated there, all kinds of weevil exterminators were suddenly out of a job. The government solved the problem by putting them to work sweeping mountains. The Swiss Alps are a main tourist attraction, so they thought it important to keep their mountains at peak appearance.
Well, now, YouTube was not the only electronics company to make the news in 2009. Gmail announced a great time-saving device. They now offer a service that will automatically go in, read all of your email, and respond to it without you being involved or inconvenienced. Two Gmail accounts can converse with each other for up to three messages each. After that, quality of response has fallen to the point that you might be committed to dinner parties or baby namings that you have no wish to attend.
A candy shop called A Quarter Of announced a new candy bar called Choclet. It's rich nougat, creamy chocolate, and pumped full of helium. One bite and you sound just like Donald Duck. It tastes great, makes you squeak, and gives everyone a laugh. And isn't that what chocolate's supposed to do? Eat the whole bar in one bite and you'll be Mickey Mouse at his squeakiest.
And finally, in 2009, the Democracy Center announced that Bolivian President Evo Morales had charged the United States with trying to force their daylight savings time on the nation of Bolivia. Morales claimed that the U.S. was trying to undermine Bolivian democracy by banning certain cocoa products and smuggling munitions into his country. Now they were trying to force their time clocks on the Bolivian people.
It seems that once April Fool's Day stories start, nobody is immune. The year 2004 saw a number of religious-based hoaxes. From Belief.net came the announcement that Oprah Winfrey, by agreement of most major Christian denominations, had been declared to be the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. It was felt that this pronouncement would lead to a wider appeal and provide a less gender-based religious practice. The one group opposed to the deification of Oprah was the Russian Orthodox Church, which stated its opposition by saying that the present structure allowed no room for the possible advancement of Dr. Phil.
Norway's Channel 2 suggested a new crime reduction strategy. Convicts were to be taken to the showings of The Passion of the Christ. Police would be stationed at the outside of the theater for the criminals to repent and confess after seeing the movie. It seems to me that clergymen could also be stationed around a theater to hear confessions and pronounce forgiveness.
Bob Carroll, creator of the online Skeptics Dictionary, announced that he was abandoning his skepticism and embracing divine design for creation. His transformation occurred as he was finishing some outdoor yard work and he discovered weed seeds stuck to the bottoms of his shoes and stockings. When he moved around, he transferred the weed seed all over the yard. Now, weeds on their own went anywhere, but these weeds knew what they were doing. They clung onto him and so were distributed in a pattern. No random occurrence here. Of course, it was organized. He said, It was like a hammer to my head. What else could it be but planned? This was truly design at work.
Discover magazine announced that an archaeologist named Leon Decour had discovered the Holy Grail. He said he had discovered on Christmas Eve when, for no apparent reason, he had worked later at the digs. Though some doubted his discovery, citing the fact that 15 years earlier he had claimed that he had discovered the Sermon on the Mount, most within academic communities found the announcement exciting. Decour also stated that he had found blood at the bottom of the cup and was awaiting DNA testing. He expects Darwin to be vindicated.
Some time ago, we told you about the false story of Alabama changing the value of pi. What we didn't tell you was why. It was in 1998 that the story was posted, and it was said that the Alabama legislature wanted to change the mathematical symbol from 3.14159 to a more biblically acceptable number of 3.0. The story was so well, or unwell, believed that the Alabama legislature began to receive responses from all around the world. They protested the proposed legislation. The original story was the creation of a physicist, Mark Boslow, who wrote it as a parody of the Alabama's legislative attempts to circumvent the teaching of evolution.
Does that speak well or ill of the intelligence of the Alabama state legislature?
And likewise of the people who wrote back.
We interrupt again for a special announcement. Salt Lake City has just announced the eradication of the deadly spaghetti weevil. It was all credited to salt in the lake. I think we can thank her for having designed the lake for this purpose.
In 1997, there was the great comic switcheroo. On April 1st, people opened to their favorite cartoons, but they looked different. Scott Adams of Dilbert had taken over Family Circus. The mother told her children to work cuter, not smarter. Jim Davis of Garfield had taken over Blondie. An overweight cat ate one of Dagwood's sandwiches. And like that. The stunt was masterminded by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott, the creators of Baby Blues. When Scott Adams was asked why he agreed to participate, he said, "You don't get many chances to tunnel under the fence."
In 1934, many American newspapers, including the Hearst papers, carried the story of a German man who flew powered only by his own lungs. Eric Koicher blew into a box on his chest, which activated rotors, which created a powerful suction effect. This lifted him aloft. He wore skis for landing and a tail fin for steering. The first pictures of him in flight appeared as part of an April Fool's edition in a German newspaper. Hearst International News Photo Service picked up the story, fell for it entirely, and broadcast it to all their subscribers. Thanks to Hearst, a local German hoax became an international one.
I bet Hearst was sorry he gave them the $100,000 for that flight around the world by the Graf Zeppelin.
Oh, it sold newspapers, and joke or not, that's what Hearst wanted.
Yeah, that's right.
In 1950, motorists driving down the Rim of the World Highway near Lake Arrowhead in Southern California discovered pine and cedar trees covered with oranges. The transformation was the work of cartoonist Frank Adams and friends. They had crept out during the night and strung 50,000 oranges along a one-mile stretch of road. They were leftovers from a recent National Orange Show in San Bernardino, and what? Let them go to waste? Nuh-uh.
In 1933, the Madison Capital Times announced that the Wisconsin State Capitol building was in ruins. After weeks of a verbose debate in the Senate and Assembly chambers, large quantities of gas had been generated. This led to a series of mysterious explosions which leveled the building. Needless to say, the lawmakers and some of the more political of the population were not amused. One reader wrote in declaring the story tactless and void of humor and a hideous jest. What did the writer know? In 1985, the Science Digest named it as one of the best hoaxes ever.
We interrupt to bring another special announcement. Transylvania has just announced the eradication of the deadly spaghetti weevil. Trees can now grow outside instead of in the dark, and authorities have issued a statement that driving spikes through the hearts of the trees to prevent them from being harvested will no longer be required.
How would you feel if this announcement came? In 1972, the Veterinary Record in England contained an article about a newly discovered disease, Brunus edwardi. The disease was prevalent in both English and American households and was known to spread. Pet surveys showed that 63.8% of homes were inhabited by at least one of these creatures. There was also a statistical relationship between the carrier and the number of children in the household. Public health officials weighed in on the implications of the disease spreading and warned of the possibilities that might occur from close personal contact. For months, the veterinary record was inundated with letters from knowledgeable people. They offered suggestions for its containment and eradication. Ready for your flu shot now? Brunus edwardi is its scientific name. Its common name is teddy bear.
In 1949, Phil Schoen, a New Zealand disc jockey, announced to his listeners that a mile-long swarm of bees was heading towards Auckland. He warned the people to take precautions, things they could do, wear their socks outside their trousers. That would keep the wasps from coming up their pants legs. Then, as they left their homes, leave honey-smeared strips outside their homes to keep the wasps from entering their houses. Afterwards, the story was denounced by the New Zealand Broadcasting Network and its director, Professor James Shelley.
He said, it undermined the rules for proper broadcasting.
Boy, I'm glad that we conform, right?
Even on April 1st?
I remind you of your obligation to report the truth and nothing but the truth.
Did he ever listen to a political speech? And they're not even limited to April 1st.
Right. Now, in 1959, the residents of Willingborough, England, awoke to find a trail of white footprints along the main streets of their town. At the end of the prints were the words, I must fly.
Did you know that at Stanford University in California, there is situated on campus the Hoover Memorial Library? It is marked by a tall tower. Sometime before 1956, the campus awoke to find giant footprints walking up one side of the tower. The police were called. The press visited. A national magazine carried the story. Well, the furor died down. The footprints were sandblasted away. Then, several months later, the campus awoke to find the footprints coming down the other side.
Is that a story you're telling or not telling?
I never said a word.
I believe it. In 1980, Soldier magazine reported that scientists had found a rare hormone in bears that continued to live on even after the bear was dead. And what was then greatest effect of this hormone? Hair growth. In nature, bears hibernate, and in the spring there were growth spurts as the bears get active again. So where is this problem? In the caps worn by the palace guards around Buckingham Palace. Disgusted by the shaggy look of some of their tall bearskin hats, the commanders of the guard had issued orders for regular haircuts for the caps.
Would you believe that this story was actually picked up by the London Daily Express and run as though it were a true story? In 1988, Guinness issued a press release stating that they had just purchased the rights to Greenwich Mean Time. According to their agreement, until 1999, Greenwich Mean Time would be renamed Guinness Mean Time. And instead of measuring time in pips, it would be measured in pint drops. The Financial Times picked up the story and ran it as true, along with a comment that Guinness was setting a brash tone for a new millennium. When they found out they had been had, they were not amused.
Remember Will Rogers saying that all he knew was what he read in the newspapers? Boy, we have been in trouble now.
And probably not amused.
In 1997, there was a widely received email telling Internet users that for 3 days, the Internet was going to be shut down for spring cleaning. There were thousands of pieces of email in the dead email box sitting out there because they couldn't be delivered. Plus, there were old unused websites clogging up the airways. This mass collection of garbage was slowing everything down.
So, how did they fix it?
Around the world, they situated 5 repair units. They were all a Toshiba model ML2274. This unit is described as a Japanese-built, multilingual, internet-crawling robot. The message presumably came from the Interconnected Network Maintenance Staff, Main Branch, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and warned the people to disconnect all devices from the internet during the course of the cleaning.
I don't know anyone who would really believe that. The internet doesn't need to be shut off for cleaning. Like any business, leave it alone. It will take care of itself. Besides, telephones. Now, there is a different matter. Years ago, every once in a while, we'd get a phone call from the phone company telling us that they were going to shut down the phone lines for cleaning. Well, you could see the dirt on the outside of the line, so you know there had to be dust on the inside as well. And to make sure they didn't blow the dirt all over the house, the phone company told us to put a plastic bag around the phone. That caught the dust that they blew out of the line.
Did the phone work better after the cleaning?
Not that I could notice. But you know, it had to be done, or they wouldn't have called us. But you know one other thing that bothered me? I wish they'd called back to tell me that they were through with the cleaning, but they never did.
In 1984, the Orlando Sentinel featured a story about a new pet that was being adopted by lots of Florida families. It was a Tasmanian mock walrus. The creature was about 4 inches long, looked like a little tiny walrus, purred like a cat, and had the disposition of a hamster. It was an ideal pet, since it never had to be bathed, and it used a litter box. Best of all, its favorite food was cockroaches. A pair of the little animals could completely rid a house of unwanted cockroaches. Now, there's always somebody that's going to complain about something. This time it was the professional exterminators. They wanted the little animals banned because their penchant for eating cockroaches was cutting into their extermination business.
In 1959, the Kokomo Times in Indiana announced that the police department had come up with a plan to cut costs and save time. The department would close each night at 6 p.m. and reopen at 6 a.m. Any calls that came in during the night would be recorded and screened the next morning. In most cases, the calls would not have been essential, so time and energy were saved. They did admit that there might be a slight problem if a wife called in saying that her husband was threatening to shoot her. But first thing in the morning, someone would check with the coroner and local hospitals. If there was no record of trouble, well, we'll know nothing had happened.
We interrupt this program for another special announcement. France has just found a way to permanently eradicate the dreaded spaghetti weevil. The famous Cordon Bleu cooking school has just discovered something called al fresco and is going to need all the spaghetti they can get. It seems that the ingredients in al fresco won't work if the spaghetti was contaminated by weevils.
Even space is not exempt from a good April 1st story. In 1976, a British astronomer announced on BBC Two that at 9:47 a.m., a once-in-a-lifetime occurrence would happen. The planet Pluto would pass directly behind Jupiter.
Now, remember, that's when Pluto was still a planet. It got demoted in 2006 and is now considered a dwarf planet, along with Eris and Ceres.
All right, okay. Now, at 9:47 a.m., the soon-to-become dwarf planet, Pluto, passed behind Jupiter. When this happened, there would be a temporary decrease in the Earth's gravity. The amazing thing, reported the astronomer, would be that people here on Earth would be able to feel that little loss of gravity. All they had to do was jump up in the air, just as Pluto passed behind Jupiter. They would feel a small sense of weightlessness.
Did you know hundreds of people called into the BBC to report that they had indeed felt the loss of gravity? One woman even called to say that she had friends over, and as the event occurred, she and all her friends seated in chairs had actually floated up toward the ceilings, chairs and all. Now, can you imagine getting all those phone calls?
Well, now, instead of calling BBC Two, all those people should have called 832-5138.
What? Call 832-5138? To tell us about feeling the loss of gravity?
No, something far more important than that. They could call and request a subchannel receiver for any of their friends who were print or visually impaired.
That's right. Think of all the special programming that would be available to them, including Did You Know? And if they were able to help support the efforts and programming of the Triangle Radio Reading Service, they could do that too, just by calling 919-832-5138. That was a great idea, Bob.
Hey, guys, this is an April Fool's Day program.
Well, I don't know about you, but I think anybody would be a fool to pass up an opportunity to provide someone who is print or visually impaired a chance to receive a subchannel receiver and hear the special programming that we provide. And all they have to do is call 919-832-5138.
He's right. But at the beginning of the program, we told the people that every story we told today was going to be an April Fool's Day hoax. That means not true. Everything you said about the Triangle Radio Reading Service, its programming and services, is true. But because this is an April Fool's Day program, they may not believe it.
Kirk's right, Bob. I hadn't thought about that. We wouldn't want someone who is print or visually impaired to be left out just because you told them about TRRS on April 1st and nobody believed you.
Ha! This is where superior intelligence comes in. If the phone call comes from Jupiter, that's 390,682,312 miles away. Now, when Voyager 1 made the trip back in 1977, it took 1 year and 6 months. That means that it may be April 1st now, but by the time we got the phone call, it would be October 1st, 2012. So, when I tell them about the services and programming provided by the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and then tell them to call 919-832-5138, well, they'd believe me.
Well, you just can't argue with logic like that. especially not on April Fool's Day. And since we're relating April Fool's Day stories, Bob, you wanted to tell a story from back in your days working in city parks.
And this is a true story.
Are you going to tell it or not tell it?
What?
Well, if you tell it, we'll know it's not true. But if you don't tell it, then we'll know it's true. So which is it?
Ah, good point. Okay, this is what's going to happen. I'll tell you the part that's not true, but I won't tell you the part that is true. All you have to do is put together the two stories. And to make it easy, I'll get Kurt and Para to help me. One of them will tell you what I would have told you, and the other will tell you what I wouldn't have told you. And so that you won't get confused, we won't tell you which one is which.
Don't ask.
Don't tell.
Now, isn't that simple? Here we go. Back in California, we had a lot of trouble with gophers digging up the city parks. We tried all sorts of things, but there just seemed to be more and more gophers. Then we got an idea. There had been good success dealing with fruit flies by introducing sterile flies. Why not try the same thing with gophers?
The first attempt to sterilize gophers utilized microwaves, and immediately there was a problem. How long do you leave them in the microwave? If the time was too long, the chamber was left unusable until it was thoroughly cleaned. We didn't want dirty, sterile gophers. But if the time was too short, all the gophers seemed to want to do, especially first thing in the morning, was to sit around drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes. Anyway, this process was slow, so we tried to do the job out in the field.
The first step was to get rid of all the tunnels and create a large open area under the ground. We did this by dropping caffeine pellets down the holes. Later, we used a vapor recovery system and just pumped down the coffee aroma from a nearby Starbucks. The excessive amounts of caffeine caused agitation, but also extreme activity. We had a flurry of activity.
Actually, it was more like a furry flurry. No, actually, it was more like a blurry furry flurry.
We had a blurry furry flurry of activity, but soon the area was cleared.
And the next step? We put cannabis into the network.
Oh, wait a minute. You used marijuana?
Well, California has a medical marijuana law, Section 420 of the Penal Code. The 420 code was cited in a lot of Quentin Tarantino movies. Besides, the gophers were shaking pretty badly. This application calmed them right down.
Then we installed small lasers underground and hooked them up to motion detectors. Photoelectronic eyes wouldn't be of any value because it was dark down there. Now the final step, pheromones. This created a new kind of activity. But as soon as it was detected, zap from the laser. Voila! A sterile gopher.
By the end of the summer, all the gophers were sterile, and that meant each succeeding generation of gophers would be sterile. The goal was 5 generations of sterile gophers. Then we could start selling them to other cities to take care of their gopher problems.
The bonus of the whole project was once the gophers became sterile, they no longer wanted to dig tunnels. Instead, they worked together and with the park employees to aerate the parks to prohibit soil compaction. And then they filled in all the holes, and we did it without stimulus money. And that's the true story.
That we told you.
And didn't tell you.
Could you tell the difference?
Now back to some more not-true stories for April Fool's Day. In 1989, thousands of motorists outside of London pulled to the side of the road to watch the descent of a strange aircraft. Witnesses called police to report an alien landing. After the police arrived, they approached the craft carefully. Suddenly, a silver-suited man stepped out of the craft. Everybody, including police, ran. Who was it? Richard Branson, chairman of Virgin Records. It was a hot air balloon disguised as a UFO. Branson had combined his two loves, of hot air balloons and of practical jokes, and had the money to do it. One problem? Weather had forced him down a day early. But he wasn't planning to come down until April 1st. So we'll count it.
Were the police amused?
I doubt it.
In 1974, residents of Sitka, Alaska, awoke to find black smoke pouring out of Mount Edgecombe. The mountain was thought to be an extinct volcano. Seems like a local prankster, Porky Picard, had flown in hundreds of old car tires, dumped them down the mouth of a volcano, and set them on fire. He did it to try to fool the local citizens, and he succeeded. In fact, he succeeded so well that 6 years later, when Mount St. Helens actually did erupt, a resident of Sitka wrote a letter to Mr. Picard telling him, "This time you've gone too far." Obviously, he was not amused.
We know that braziers can cause trouble, but just how much we didn't know. In 1982, the Daily Mail newspaper reported that 10,000 rogue braziers had been made using copper wire. This wire could cause static electricity, which in turn could cause considerable disruption in radio and television transmission. One chief engineer took it very seriously, and he ordered all his female assistants to inform him of what kind of bra they were wearing.
In 1998, Burger King took out a full-page ad in USA Today to announce a new item on their menu. What was the item that deserved such attention? A left-handed hamburger. There were 32 million left-handed potential customers out there, and what was being done to serve them? Not enough. So Burger King came to the rescue. And what was the difference about their left-handed burger? The bun was the same. The patty was the same. So also was the pickle, onion, lettuce, tomato, and dressing. But Burger King rotated the material inside the bun 180 degrees to accommodate the lefties. The result? Many came in asking for the new left-handed burger. But there were others who came in insisting on their old right-handed Whopper.
Catering to left-handed people. I don't know. Sounds pretty sinister to me.
In 1992, a newscast on National Public Radio announced that Richard Nixon had decided to come back and run for president again. He had a dynamite campaign slogan, "I didn't do anything wrong, and I won't do it again." The show was inundated with angry callers. Not only were they not amused by the announcement, they were outraged.
Besides not noticing the date, this was April 1st, they also seemed to forget any learning they ever had of presidential law. Nixon had been elected in 1968 and reelected in 1972, two terms. He couldn't be elected again even if he did promise never to do it again, whatever that he hadn't done in the first place.
In 1975, a news program in Australia announced that the country was going to be changing to metric time. There would be 100 seconds to the minute, 100 minutes to the hour, and 20 hours to the day. In addition, some renaming would have to be done. Seconds would become millidays, minutes will become centidays, and hours will become decidays. The biggest problem people had was how to reprogram their digital watches.
No, I've got a question. Is the day going to become twice as long?
No. Why?
Well, because at 60 seconds to the minute, there are 3,600 seconds in an hour. 24 hours makes 86,400 seconds to the day. But 100 seconds to the minute makes 100,000 seconds to the hour. And a 20-hour day is 200,000 seconds. You go to work at 8 o'clock in the morning, take an hour for lunch, and when do you finish? Do you go by the new hours or the old hours? You might be getting home a couple hours before you left.
Bob, it's an April Fool's Day story. It's not true.
Well, that might be, but inquiring minds want to know.
While Bob is trying to figure out if it was himself that he met at the breakfast table, I want to apologize to Kurt for the next hoax, but it just can't be helped. In 1972, a team of zoologists from Yorkshire Flamingo Zoo found the remains of a mysterious creature in Loch Ness.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me something about Nessie?
Well, we might wonder to whom you were talking while on vacation last year, but the creature that the zoologists found was 15.5 feet long and weighed a ton. They pulled the creature out and placed him in their van to take him back to their lab.
They were able to pull a ton of Nessie out of the lock?
Well, we didn't say it was Nessie.
Thank goodness.
Yet. And they were very strong. But on the way back, they were stopped by the police and arrested. Seems there was an old law dating back to 1937, which forbade taking any unknown animal out of the lock.
I hope this one remains unknown.
The press had a field day. They named the creature the Son of Nessie. It turns out that the deceased was a bull elephant seal from the North Atlantic. It had been in an aquarium and died. A group of zoologists planned a prank on their lab mates. They shaved the whiskers off the seal, threw him in the freezer, and waited for April Fool's Day. The day before, they took it down to the lock and threw it in, then notified their friends so they would find it the next day.
But then along came the police.
Right, and what started off as a private joke turned into a major hoax.
Yes, it did. And think of the headlines. Extra, Son of Nessie found dead.
Thank goodness it wasn't true. If the Son of Nessie was dead, what about Nessie herself? And who did I talk to out there?
Kurt, it's April 1st.
So?
What you just said a little while ago, all the stories were made up. They didn't happen.
I knew that.
Did you also know that I have another special announcement? The state of North Carolina has just announced that they have eradicated the deadly spaghetti weevil. The governor just made the announcement. Seems that one of the Outer Banks ponies had stepped in some tar as he was crossing a river and discovered that tar off his heel killed the weevil.
What was the pony doing crossing the river?
Well, he had saved two cases of Chianti that had washed ashore. The Chianti goes very well with spaghetti. And he was tired of having his spaghetti dinner spoiled by the weevils. So he was on his way to Raleigh to do some research on the origin of the weevil.
And what did he find out?
Well, he found out that back in the summer of '87, there was this lady weevil, a grain weevil, who was being courted by two other weevils. There was Arnold, a huge, big, bondy builder type who was a boll weevil. Naturally, he was a southern local boy. And then there was Giuseppe, a small, bespectacled, nerdy type starch-eating weevil. He was a foreigner. Both of them courted her. Both of them proposed.
Which one did she choose?
Well, she chose Giuseppe.
Why?
Well, because he was the lesser of two weevils.
Oh.
Oh, Bob.
Worse, the children turned out to like spaghetti.
If it seems like you never have enough time to get things done, listen to this. In 1984, the El Dorado Daily Journal, based in Illinois, announced a contest to see who could save the most daylight for daylight savings time. The rules were simple. Beginning on the first day of daylight savings time, contestants were required to see who could save the most daylight. Any kind of container was acceptable, but only pure daylight was permitted. No pre-dawn or sunset light was allowed, and especially moonlight was strictly prohibited. But in interest of fairness, light coming through daytime clouds could be stored. The person who captured the most daylight won. The paper's editor was interviewed by correspondents from both NBC and CBS, and papers throughout the country ran the story.
You know, that town could have become rich.
How's that?
Well, all the daylight they saved. They could have used it like energy credits and sold it to someone else. Oh, think of the possibilities. A big corporation is having a company picnic and wants to be sure the event isn't spoiled by rain. Sports teams could do away with stadium lights and never have to worry about a game being called on account of darkness. Think of the money they could save. And listen to this idea. What if they sold it to reporters who were covering governmental stories? No more news blackouts. Everybody would want more light.
Bob, I think you've been staring at the moon again.
As crazy as this might sound, there might be one place that wouldn't want more sunlight.
Where's that?
Listen to this April Fool's Day story. In 2007, realclimate.org posted about the work of Dr. Hugh Nowat of New Zealand. Dr. Nowat was head of the New Zealand Institute of Animal Climatology. He said that his research had proven that global warming was being caused by the decline of the sheep population in New Zealand. Here's what his research found. The large number of sheep in the country increased the planet's albedo.
What's albedo?
He described it as the planet's ability to reflect heat back out into space. Since sheep are white, they have a tremendous reflective capability. But as their numbers decrease, more and more solar radiation is being absorbed by the Earth, and temperatures are rising. And the problem is getting worse. As temperatures rise, there is less need for woolen sweaters, which in turn lowers the need for sheep.
Did you know that we got the name of our program from that researcher?
We got our name from Dr. You Know It.
Well, it was before he became a doctor. As a researcher in graduate school, he was always finding out new and exciting things. The other students gave him his title of Discoverer of Interesting Data. They abbreviated DID. There you have it.
Did you know? What?
Now he's a doctor.
All right, back to the Massachusetts Institute of Technology for the next story. In 1988, MIT's homepage announced that the prestigious university had been sold to the Disney Corporation for $6.9 billion. In the announcement was included a photograph of the famous university dome, now topped with a pair of mouse ears. Supposedly, the university was to be dismantled brick by brick and then reassembled in Orlando, Florida. Once there, the campus would be enlarged with the addition of a school of Imagineering, the Scrooge McDuck School of Management, and the Donald Duck School of Linguistics. The students there were amused.
In 2000, the British Daily Mail announced the Esporta Health Clubs had launched a new line of workout socks that were designed to help people lose weight. The stockings, which were named Fat Socks, actually sucked body fat out of sweating feet. This is how they worked. As a person's body temperature rose and their blood vessels dilated, a nylon polymer in the stockings drew excess lipids out from the body through the sweat in the person's feet. Remember how your socks smell after a workout? Now they're being more effective. When your workout is over, simply remove the socks and throw them in the washer. At the same time, you'll wash your socks and wash away your excess fat.
I wonder how that would work if you were on your own septic system. You're not supposed to put all kinds of fat down the drain.
Thanks for bringing that to our attention.
Speaking of smelly socks, in 1965, BBC Television featured an interview with a professor who had just developed a device he called Smell-O-Vision. By hooking the device to the transmission, the viewer could get a whiff of whatever he was watching. The professor gave a demonstration by cutting up onions and brewing coffee on the air. Several people called in and claimed that they could smell the results. Too bad he didn't wear some gym socks.
In 2004, National Public Radio, on their program All Things Considered, stated that U.S. Post Office had just announced the creation of portable zip codes. Of course, the move to a portable zip code could save millions of dollars, as the Post Office no longer had to process a change of address form for anyone who moved. No matter where you go, your mail would automatically follow. But there was another, more personal reason for the new portable zip code. Lives of entire families were often upset when someone had to move because of schooling or work or military service. Being able to take your old zip code with you was like a connection with the past. It was a giant umbilical cord connecting you with an old neighborhood and friends.
One of the earliest April 1st pranks to be recorded occurred in 1698. Select people were invited out to the ditch around the Tower of London to observe the washing of the lions. Crowds turned out to see this glorious event. Of course, there was no such activity. After that, I should suspect that history would have taught the people of London not to be so gullible.
Oh, but it didn't. In 1848, invitation cards were passed out for bearer and friend to witness the washing of the lion.
And the people fell for it again.
But I'll bet it wasn't the same people.
Oh, yeah. The Journal of August Louis Maurice Strauss records that he went down to the Tower of London at the appointed time to witness the results. There was a near riot when people discovered there was no washing of the lions. In fact, there were no lions to wash. Strauss recorded that he was recognized by some to whom he had given cards. Literally, he had a run for his life, and he hid out for several weeks until things cooled down.
Now, if that wasn't funny enough, apparently the prank was repeated again and again over the years.
Maybe it didn't happen this year, but next time for sure.
This is a story of everybody should get into the act. In 1993, the China Youth Daily, an official state newspaper of China, announced on the front page that the government had decided to exempt from their one-child-only law anyone holding a Ph.D. The article claimed that this would reduce the need for importing intellectuals from other countries to help with China's modernization policy. Intellectuals in Singapore were encouraged to marry each other and have children. Even though a disclaimer was placed at the end of the article, identifying it as a joke, an international news agency and a paper in Hong Kong picked up the story and repeated it as fact.
Were they not amused?
That would be an understatement. The Chinese government responded by condemning April Fool's Day jokes as dangerous Western tradition. Such jokes were an extremely bad influence. Put plainly, April Fool's Day is Liar's Day.
When Thomas Edison invented the phonograph in 1877, people must have thought there was no end to his genius. So, in 1878, when the New York Graphic published an article claiming that Edison had invented a food machine, there was no shortage of believers. The article said that Edison had discovered a process that turned soil directly into cereal, and he could also turn water directly into wine. World hunger was solved. The conservative Buffalo Commercial Advertiser heaped high praise upon Edison. In a long editorial, they spoke of his genius. Following, the Graphic took the liberty of reprinting the editorial from the Advertiser. They placed it under a simple two-word headline, They Bite.
We interrupt this program for another special announcement. The Chicken Producers of America have announced the complete eradication of the deadly spaghetti weevil.
Wait a minute.
Oh, it was just like they do with chicken eggs. They found a way to inoculate spaghetti eggs before they hatch and start to grow on the trees. The injections make the young spaghettis completely immune to the weevil. As long as they keep up with their immunization program, the weevil is gone.
Chicken producers don't raise spaghetti. And spaghetti doesn't start out as an egg. It doesn't happen.
Oh, yeah? Well, where do they get macaroni shells from? And you mean you've never heard of egg noodles?
Kurt, just remember what this day is.
And remember what happens when art begins to imitate reality.
Hey, I'm Bob, not Art.
All right. Some of you may have heard of the infamous M25, the highway that circles London. Well, in 1991, the London Times announced that the problem of M25 was solved. The Department of Transportation announced they were finalizing plans that would make the road one way only during the week. They figured that congestion would be eased and traffic load could double if all traffic were moving in the same direction. So the plan was, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, the cars would move clockwise, and Tuesday and Thursday, they would move counterclockwise. Weekends would remain unchanged. As always, some were not amused, but took the announcement quite seriously. One protester was from the Labour Transport, who stated that already many drivers couldn't tell their left from their right. The loudest complaint came from a resident of Swamley in Kent, who wrote, "Villagers use the motorway to make shopping trips to Orpington. Some days this will be a journey of 2 miles. On other days it would be 117 miles. This scheme is lunatic."
In 1999, executives at 130 major companies received professionally designed packages of information about a new technology. It was wireless electricity. Otmar Industries of Switzerland had developed a product that, once plugged in, would wrap the entire house in an aura of electricity. You could even make toast on the roof. About 30 people, including 3 high-level executives, called for more information.
Bob, aren't you going to tell us, see what Switzerland could do once the spaghetti weevil was eradicated?
I don't have to. You already know.
In 1994, NPR's All Things Considered reported that large companies, such as Pepsi-Cola, were sponsoring teenagers to tattoo corporate logos on their ears. In return, the teenagers would receive a lifetime 10% discount on Pepsi products. There was a very enthusiastic response to the announcement.
On March 31, 1940, the press agent for the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia issued a statement that the world was going to end the next day. A local radio station carried the story with the warning, "Your worst fears are confirmed." The Institute was not amused and fired the press agent.
Well, rightly so. Who could possibly believe that the world was coming to an end in 1940? It wasn't going to happen until 1997. That's when the Halley-Bopp comet came.
In 2000... PETA warned that it planned to sabotage a bass fishing contest in Texas by releasing tranquilizers into the lake that put all the fish to sleep.
In 2000, there was a report that researchers in Florida had come up with a Viagra-like pill for sexually frustrated pets. Your hamster needs no longer suffer.
In 1995, there was a statue of Lenin standing in Cavriggio, Italy, that was seen to weep milky tears.
In 1993, a radio station announced that officials in Cologne, Germany, passed a city ordinance that limited jogging speed in city parks to 6 miles per hour. Anything faster than that would disturb the squirrels. And right now was their mating season.
In 2000, early morning commuters along the M3 found some new striping along the motorway. Next to the striping was a sign that read, "Zebra Crossing."
Hell hath just announced the eradication of the spaghetti weevil. They blamed it on the snowball.
In 1990, Golf Magazine published an article which said that the elite Augusta National Golf Course was going to go public. Y'all come. The private members were very not amused. Golf Magazine had to print a retraction.
In 1995, the Greek Ministry of Culture announced that they had found the burial places of Socrates. There was still a full bowl of hemlock in the tomb.
In 1978, a large barge appeared in the harbor of Sydney, Australia. It was apparently towing a large iceberg. The local adventurer and millionaire businessman, one Dick Smith, had long been touting his plan of towing an iceberg from Antarctica to Sydney, and it looked like he had been successful. His plan was to chop the iceberg up into cube-sized pieces and then sell it to the public for 10 cents each. These ice cubes fresh from the pure waters of Antarctica, were guaranteed to improve the taste of any drink to which they were added. Crowds lined the water's edge, with the press in great attendance. Then the tug made its way into the Sydney Harbor. It started to rain as the press snapped pictures, and the people watched as the shaving cream washed off the barge, revealing the plain white plastic sheets underneath.
Speaking of Antarctica, in 1995, Discover magazine reported that a renowned marine biologist, Dr. April Pazzo, had found a new species of animal in Antarctica. She named it the hot-headed naked borer. It had a hard, bony plate in its head that was heated to very high temperatures by surrounding blood vessels. Its head became so hot that it could quickly bore right through the frozen ice. This ability helped it in its food gathering. The hothead could come up under a penguin, heat the ice beneath it, and as the penguin fell into the slush, dinner time! Dr. Pazzo also theorized that the hothead might also be the answer to the mysterious disappearance of Professor Philippe Poisson back in 1837. Dr. Pazzo stated that to the hothead, Dr. Poisson probably looked like a penguin.
Did you know that Discover magazine received more mail over that story than any other story they had ever published? Well, just add hothead and naked together. Works every time.
In 2008, The Miracles of Evolution, shown on the BBC, showed footage of the migration of penguins from Antarctica to the tropics. It seems that one species of penguins, the Adelie, doesn't like the extreme cold of Antarctic winters, so when the time comes, they take to flight and in perfect formation leave Antarctica for the warmer climates of South America rainforest. The presenter of the program was Terry Jones. Think Monty Python.
We interrupt our program for one last important breaking story. Did you know proudly announces the complete eradication of the deadly spaghetti weevil from Antarctica?
Bob, there's no spaghetti being grown in Antarctica. There never has been.
Well, that's because the weevils were waiting. Now that the weevil is gone, look out! I hear that the trees in Antarctica will produce a brand new variety of spaghetti. It will be served straight out of the freezer with cold cuts and garnished with Colby cheese. Of course, the recommended wine is cold duck, served at 80 degrees. What have you got to say to that?
This is Kirk Benrood for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program has been designed for a print and visually impaired audience. We want to state again that today's show was a special edition prepared especially for April Fool's Day. And I must comment that this program would have been very different without our own personal April Fool.
This is Parra Tolson. While none of these stories were true, they were prepared in celebration for the one and only calendar event per year of April 1st. Bob doesn't have a calendar, so he's with us all year long.
And this is Bob Martin. I train hard to keep in shape. I believe everything that I read in the newspapers, especially when it's in November. I want to be the best April Fool that I can.
And you're succeeding.
Very well.
Did you know they even let me out for dinner? Tonight we're going to have spaghetti.
Good night.
Good night.